right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I don't want to get, you know, they talk about beating a dead horse. I don't want to get off the subject that you and I have been talking about for the last 15, 20 minutes, because I think if we are on these airwaves and we don't bring... we're going to beat the dead horse because it's required.
Yeah.
I think for something as serious as what's happening with the selfishness, you talked about a book and a guy who wrote last week, a guy who wrote a book that basically addressed the American people and us.
Yeah, well, that was de Tocqueville. It was a French philosopher who toured the United States in the 1825 to 1830. Wrote a book that came out in 1835 that has been read by many history students ever since, in which he just described what he sensed to be the American character, the character of the American people who had settled in America and had lived throughout, who had moved throughout the Americas that he traveled in that time period long ago. Yeah.
You know, Sandy, dare we get caught in a critical race theory issue. But anyway, here's where Sandy, I just for the life of me don't understand why we look at things or don't look at things that are really going to be important for the overall survival of our nation. That's what should be at the root of all of these things, right? The longevity of the nation, and the people who come after us. It's, you know, we can live, you know, and enjoy life in the next 40, 50, 100 years, and the nation is still going to be a vibrant nation. But we're talking long term, right? I mean,
the country has so far been vibrant. Much of it has to do with the sort of the demographics of the country, the growth of the country, the the huge, vast geography of the country. That, so, you know, in many respects, America has succeeded in spite of itself, not necessarily because of itself. De Tocqueville noticed and talked about the extreme individualism of Americans, and he identified the fact that it might keep Americans from having the sense of community that might be required to succeed in terms of realizing the full benefits of what mankind can achieve. And now that's what we're talking about right now, is this individualism of Americans that has caused us to, in many respects, develop a very selfish value system, a value system that doesn't cause us to react to the global warming that is obviously a world community problem, that causes us to have a great deal of trouble reacting to the COVID health risk that is the community health risk, not the individual risk of each person getting sick, but rather the community health risk of our hospital system. It's caused us to have a lot of trouble getting our arms around the community problems associated with child daycare and a social safety net that preserves a lot of community values for individuals. It's caused us, I think, to look at the problem of the inner city and say, why aren't those people just fixing it themselves? Why don't they pull themselves up? Instead of viewing it as a community, we look at things as individual problems that need to be solved by individuals.
You know, Sandy, you look at it even on a scale of the states' rights. We've got to have our own independent states' rights, because somehow we feel better if we can dictate what we want. We don't want, it can't be national rights.
Well, states are closer to the individual, right? And just in the same way, the United States, there are many people who think the United States' involvement in the United Nations is a nefarious loss of individual rights in some respects, or at least national rights, because it'll be national interests buried in world interests.
I mean, right.
We just have a problem in America wrapping our minds around the notion that we should worry about things that are bigger than us being ourselves, and that we should all of us should look out for ourselves, and if everyone does that, we'll all be just fine.
You know, Sandy, so I was talking about this article in today's Wall Street Journal. Many baby boomers will soon need adult supervision. Not romantic, not something people want to think about, not something people want to talk about. But the storage, the shortage of caregivers for the elderly is becoming a crisis. You know it. I know it. Anybody with a modicum of common sense knows it. We're the baby boomers, the largest group, you know, still. I think millennials outstripe us a little bit now. But there's still just a huge number of us. I was watching something, I think it was on Meet the Press yesterday, when they said that by 2029, no baby boomers will be left to become to fly planes anymore by 2020.
They'll all be too old.
They'll all be too old to fly.
You weren't forecasting.
No.
Demise by 2029.
No. My point is, that's something that somebody should have been looking at, right?
Well, I mean, the problem with, I think businesses plan. I think our government only plans to the extent that our community values require that it plan. You know, our community values end up being our political values. Our government tends to reflect our political values. And we don't have this community interest that would cause us to look forward and think about what is the community going to be like. That's what plans are about. Plans are more about that than they are about individual. Individuals plan on their own if they can.
You know, Sandy, this issue, and it always makes me again think about, you know, places like China and other places, and I keep bringing up China simply because of the sheer numbers of people that they have, and then always going back to you and planning, and maybe that's the part of the business part of things that our government should be adopting, the planning part of it, the aspect of it. I don't know about the fact that businesses have all the answers to all the things, and that because somebody was in business, they're right for government. But I do think that it's short-sightedness if you don't look at what the businesses do and try to incorporate that in the way the government runs.
Well, I'm just suggesting that businesses, at least the ones that last, tend to look forward in time and try and figure out how they're going to deal with the future as they foresee it. And our government just has a great deal of trouble doing that. And, you know, the notion that we would have a big tax reduction in the middle of a boom without looking forward in time to see what that would look like in a period of recession, I guess the theory was, well, if we have this big tax reduction, we'll never have another recession. That can't have been any sensible thinking. But, I mean, we continually, on both sides of the aisle, put our head in the sand and stop looking forward and worrying about what things will look like in the future. We do have people out there championing the future. I mean, the environmentalists worry about the environment in the future. And there are those who worry about how we will deal with Social Security, but there are some whose answer to that is, well, we'll just get rid of it. Well, that's not an answer, right? That's a non-answer, and that's a selfish answer. That's a non-community-based answer.
It's also a recipe for disaster.
Yes.
We're segueing into all of these different things that I had brought up. America needs a true wealth tax. Here's our plan to tax the rich. They really, really rich. You talked about the cuts. And at a time now where our proposed tax plan would reduce extreme wealth inequality, but would only target a very, very, very rich Americans. Maybe we don't know what a very, very, very rich American is, right? I mean,
There definitely are some, you know. I suppose I would qualify as something that's someone who's affluent, but there are people out there who are unbelievably affluent. But I think rather than talking about income equalization, which has a ring to it that, that is disturbing to some people. It's a little bit like the Marxian principle, you know, of equal, you know.
The redistribution of wealth is what
you're saying. Redistribution of wealth. I think we should just talk about asking people to give back, to pay forward.
Do you think that works?
These people have prospered so much as the result of being lucky enough to have been born in America and lived in the American system that allows them to prosper so much on a lawful basis. There are people around the world who prosper greatly. There are the oligarchs in Russia. But they can't sleep at night soundly because probably they understand that they've done it with, many of them, through graft and corruption. People in America amass great amounts of wealth without any of that doubt and any of that conscience problem, because they're doing it all in an upright and legal fashion in a country that affords them that opportunity. But if that's the case, then they ought to feel generous about giving some small portion of it back to the community and reflecting their community interest, and not necessarily doing it through charity. Many of them can point at the Boys and Girls Club donation they made and whatever, but rather just giving back to the society what it is that society has afforded
them. But Sandy, I want to challenge the upright and legal fashion. Well, upright and legal doesn't always mean it's you know, because
I think most people in America who've gotten very wealthy have done it in an upright and legal and morally correct fashion.
So I guess I want to challenge the fact that when you see the amount of resources that they've been able to garner, at the same time the middle class has been in reverse. Yeah, it's legal. But it's been at the expense.
Well, it hasn't been at the expense of. It's been coincident with, okay?
Okay.
The idea that they're making their money at the expense of the middle class is not necessarily true. It might just be coincidental that the trends have worked that way. But I'm suggesting that on an individual basis, those people will perceive themselves as having carried out their lives in an entirely honest and moral fashion.
So, Sandy, let's go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. We'll be right back. So I'm saying you got to go.